hit the nail on the head with there is no balance. There's like no such thing. Like I always feel like things are out of balance, and maybe I can develop that aspect of my life more. But I think it boils down to a matter of just like almost necessity, right? Like this is, when I got pregnant with Mav, it was not planned. And I'm later in life, my oldest child at the time, like to the day, 19 years to the day between my oldest and my now baby Maverick, right? And people are calling me geriatric mom when I walk into the doctor's office, like that's the official label.
Hey mamas, welcome to the Being Mother Hustler podcast. I'm your host, Mother Hustler, Kareen Mills. I'm a mama of two boys, founder of a tribe called Mother Hustler Nation, co-founder of the Game Changers Global Network, an insurance professional turned lifestyle entrepreneur, keynote speaker, and author. Each and every week, I'm bringing you stories and thoughts from mom entrepreneurs who will inspire you to take massive imperfect action, unapologetically chase your dreams, and eradicate your excuses so you can quit treating your business like a hobby and turn your side hustle into full-time income. I know being Mother Hustler is not easy, but sisters, we are making it happen even in this beautiful mess. Thank you so much for being present with me today. Now let's go mother the world. Sarah Coleman is a mother to six beautiful children and has dedicated her life to helping people of all shapes and sizes lose weight, get fit, and obtain the tools and data they need for optimal health and wellness. She brings over 20 years of experience in the fitness industry and is a CrossFit Level 1 and 2 certified coach, personal trainer, and group coach. Sarah is obsessed with making health obtainable for all. Inspired by her two younger sisters with Down syndrome, Sarah created and had developed Inclusive Fitness, a program that celebrates all abilities with group class formats for adults with physical and mental disabilities. In 2012, Sarah went through a divorce after 13 years of her primary role in life being a wife and a mother. In 2012, Sarah opened 346 Grit CrossFit that she now co-owns with her best friend, Chaucy. 346 Grit is a facility dedicated to promoting functional fitness where people could learn how to train their entire body in a community that celebrated struggle and supported everyone's efforts to reclaim health. Through the chaos of owning and operating a business and navigating raising her kiddos, she found fulfillment, humor, and the love of her life. Sarah remarried in 2014 on national television, Hotel Impossible, Stormy Wedding, to the love of her life, Jesse Coleman. In 2018, she gave birth to their son, Maverick. That was exactly 19 years to the day apart from Sarah's oldest son, Cameron. Her children are her greatest joys in life. Cameron is 20, Tyler is 18, Riley 15, daughter Isabella is 11. Her stepson is 7, and welcoming another son, Maverick, has been unexpected savior in what was one of the most trying times of her life, her father's passing. Sarah believes unhealthy food and fitness habits have created a disease and obesity epidemic in this country. Through her one-on-one work with clients, Sarah observed the endless struggle involved with quick fixes, misinformation, and treating the symptoms rather than the disease. After her own father was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, Sarah decided to make a change on a massive scale. She decided to create grit uprising to establish a movement of like-minded people who want to break free and harness their indomitable spirit. She has made it her mission to educate and empower people to reset the scales and reclaim their own right to health and wellness. Mother Hustlers, please help me in welcoming the Mother Hustler mothering the world this week, Level 1 and Level 2 CrossFit certified coach and co-owner of 346 Grit CrossFit, Sarah Coleman.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Being Mother Hustler podcast, and I have beautiful Sarah Coleman, who is an amazing mother hustler. I watched her coach to CrossFit class that I did, like several class and challenges, and I was like, girl, you gotta be on my podcast, sister. That's the epitome of a mother hustler right there. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be a part of this. Such a great cause. And
super, super excited to chat with you. So it's pretty casual. We're just having a beer and a coffee, you know, like literally.
Cheers.
So, okay. We were just talking about the mess behind you right there, because you have remodeled your home. You've angled your camera to the most beautiful part of your home, which I adore. And guys, Sarah showed me right off the bat. I'm like, okay, hold on, sister. I have to.
Yeah. I'm like, how can I angle this so you don't see the crazy messes at the piles of messes everywhere? Like, I need a filter that makes the house look clean and me look 21 again. How can I do that? And then
you look like you're 21.
Just lighting. It's all lighting.
Oh my gosh. I had such a late night last night. So I just woke up and I'm like shaking my hair so it looks a little plump. And then I put some stuff on and then boom, 2 minutes. I was done.
Fantastical. Well, you did a fantastic job. And we had a late night too. We went karaokeing, which we never do. Oh,
I love karaoke.
I usually hate it, but last night was so fun. For the first time ever, I was like, give me that mic. I don't care if I sound like a Barry Manilow wannabe. Give me that. Because I'm so, so low. I have no idea how to sing, but it was really fun. And it was fun to, my Mav went with my mom for a bit, which normally I'm a spaz when I leave him anywhere right now. But it was great. It was fun. We had a good time.
Okay, let's talk about your mom, because I don't have a mom nearby, and you're so fortunate to have family nearby, although I do have my brother from time to time. Like when we go on vacation, he comes to the house and let the dog out. You know, that's like as much as help I'm going to get from him. But how do you balance? And I ask this with a question, knowing that there's, like, for me, I don't feel like there's ever any balance. So with you, you know, you have Mav in front of you with your little backpack, or on the back with your little pack to carry him. And literally, guys, he would just be crawling all over the CrossFit gym. And I mean, he knows what he's doing too. Like, he's been, you know, when they're in our womb, I think that they start developing and learning the things that we do around them. So how does Sarah balance all that?
Well,
if there's such a thing.
I think you hit the nail on the head with there is no balance. There's like no such thing. Like, I always feel like things are out of balance, and maybe I can develop that aspect of my life more. But I think it boils down to a matter of just like almost necessity, right? Like, this is, when I got pregnant with Mav, it was not planned. And I'm later in life, my oldest child at the time, like to the day, 19 years to the day between my oldest and my now baby Maverick, right? And people are calling me geriatric mom when I walk into the doctor's office, like that's the official label. And I'm like,
oh my gosh,
not enough. I feel old and pregnant. And now you're telling me I'm tiny geriatric. So, and then on top of that, just the reality of like, I'm running a business that I'm passionate about and I love what I'm doing and it fills me with purpose, but how can I do that knowing, because I've been through the young years of babies before in my life, knowing everything that that encompasses. And I remember walking in when I found out I was pregnant to my business partner, was like, I can't do this. So I'm gonna have to quit all things in life. Like, I can't raise a baby and run a business and do all the things that this entails. Not, I already feel like I'm stretched so thin. And I feel like I'm failing every day. And she just looked at me and she was like, we've got this, we're good. We'll raise this baby together. And it really was like all I needed to hear. You know what I mean? Like, it's all I needed to hear to be like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, there is no normal. We create our own path with how we reach success. And even though up till this point, my normal, as far as running a business, I kind of like had an idea and a template in my mind what that looked like with raising my other children. It was all the reminder that I needed that, like, that's right. Like, we create what happens here. And so when he was born, it really was like, well, I'm going to have to find the world's best backpack to carry this baby around. I'm going to have to figure out how to keep him safe and athlete safe in this environment while I'm coaching. And I have to know that the people that are going to, that I want to pull into this experience are going to welcome that and are going to see that as an asset. Like, I can't focus on all the people that would be turned off by this experience, you know, like how irresponsible it is to have a baby on your back. It's so loud in here. And, you know, we had little headphones for him in the beginning. And what was created when I switched that mindset from, I can't do this, this doesn't look like my normal, into, I'm going to make it work for my family and my lifestyle. And what was created was magical for me. Yeah. And yeah, Maverick, it's crazy to, Maverick, by the way, is what you name your baby when you're 40 and have him. Like, you name him Maverick, you can name him whatever you want. But he coaches now. He's running around everywhere, but he's mimicking every movement that we do. He's grabbing like PVCs and performing Olympic lifts right next to me. And
wow.
When he was first born, he was literally like lulled to sleep by the sound of the barbells hitting the floor, which was so crazy to me because I coached as much as I could up until I had him. And so those noises, those sounds were familiar to him. They were home. And that home is something that I feel like is we create for our children and our families. And it's been interesting to watch it, you know, all unfold and realize that, like, we are capable as mothers and women, we are capable of creating beauty, even if it looks outside of what we think in our minds or have been taught or were raised looks like a normal family, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is because we think that because of the things that we see, right? And we need to quit comparing ourselves to others, because what others' lives are so different. It's never ever going to be the same. So you're comparing apples to orange. And like, I just commend you for going for it, because man, I'm turning 40 this month and I don't know if I can handle what you were able to handle. Yeah. Everything yeah. that you have.
Do it. Get pregnant. All the cool kids pregnant. Let's go.
Holy crap. So you talk about Mav, but guys, Sarah has how many kids, Sarah?
Irresponsibly too many. I figured out how all that happens. So I feel like I feel like I've lived a million lifetimes in my life. And I got married young, grew up in up on Mount Tabor in Portland, but grew up in a really like very, very conservative, very religious home. And, you know, what I was taught from a very young age was my worth and my calling in life was to be a mother. And I believed that wholeheartedly. College was never really an option. It was find someone who fits this criteria that can marry you in the temple and then start having children. And so I really believe that was my calling in life, very much so. And so I got married very young at 19 and I knew my spouse for 2 weeks. And
wow.
then we were quickly engaged, and then after 2 months married. you know, in the complete, like no sex before marriage, and very like, it was very fit in this box of what I felt like I needed to do to be worthy and be with my family forever. These were things that were like, I wanted so badly to be good. And so I got married. We were pregnant within like 9 months. So I had my first beautiful son, Cameron, when I was just barely 20. I'm kind of sad that I didn't have him at 19, because then I could have been like, oh, look, I was a teen mother. But I had him just barely at 20. Boggles my mind now, because he's 20 and I look at him and I'm like, oh, if he had a child right now, we would be in trouble.
Oh my gosh. My
20-year-old knows what to do. And so I had him then, and love of my life at the time, you know, he's perfect. And then shortly after, I had my son Tyler, who is just turning 18 and graduating high school and off to college here soon, which is so hard. It's so hard. Nobody talks about how hard it is when you raise kids and then you send them off to be adults. Like, there's a mourning that happens there. It's all I want for him. I'm excited for him to go and explore the world. But man, maybe it would be easier if he was, you know, this, or any of my kids were awful, but they're so good and fun to be around and kind. And, you know, if he was anything other, maybe I'd be like, fine, 18, let the prison system have you. But sending him off to college, it's hard. We did all this hard work of growing together, and literally I grew up with my kids, I feel like, and now I'm going to miss them. So Tyler, they were about 20 months apart. And then shortly after, probably 2 years, we took a little bit of a break. I had Riley, who is just like me. Everybody always has that one that's just like them. Yeah. So he's a wild one. We don't like being bored. So he's a pretty impulsive, but amazing and incredible, and going to change the world. I tell him that all the time. You're going to change the world. Don't care what you do in school. Like, awesome. You're going to change the world, because you jump, you're impulsive, but you also have courage to do that. And then my daughter, I finally got my little baby girl, Isabella. And she's, again, like perfect, has brothers around her everywhere. And then when Bella was about 3, my marriage kind of fell apart. I think it was a very difficult and hard time to transition from, you know, what I felt like was this perfect family and everything we were supposed to be doing into now single motherhood. And that's when I walked towards like, okay, I have to support my beautiful children. Wow. So I moved into, do I go back to college, which I know will take all this time away from my kids and will be really difficult. And they were all still fairly young and I had been a stay-at-home mom. However, I had been coaching group fitness classes and I did have a business at the time, a small business, really small little hobby business. I created a program where I taught group fitness to adults with disabilities. I have 2 sisters with Down syndrome. So I'd already kind of been through and navigated like, how hard is it to open a business? I'll just look, oh, I have a business license. Here we go. Provide a service. So I was like, opening a gym can't be that different. And everything kind of fell into place. My dear friend, who is now my business partner at the time, kind of rallied around that. We both taught group fitness together. We both came from the same background. And she was like, I know this other woman. Women are freaking incredible and amazing. I am convinced there are soulmates in life. But another woman who was a very successful entrepreneur and owned a warehouse and was all about supporting and building up other small businesses and women in general. And so when we pitched the idea of what we wanted to do, she was like, I have a space, let's go, and really worked with us to be able to open what is now, you know, 346 Grit CrossFit. And we started in like this 1200 square foot space. And I wrote a business plan. I took forever to write it out. It was concrete, it was nothing. And it really was just like, come as you are and be coached. And we were just a bunch of broken people coming together in sacred ground just to be better and be vulnerable and, you know, high five each other and swear and just be, you know, and all different levels of life. And so my children were able to kind of like experience that. It was the first time that I really had to like push against all these limiting beliefs up till that point of what constituted a perfect family and what my kids needed. I felt like my kids up till that point, they need like 5 o'clock dinner time, we all eat together and then we do homework together and then we read scriptures and then we say prayer and then we have great moments that bond us together and then we tuck them in and we have special moments where I tuck them in. That to me was what had to happen for them, you know, to be good, solid human beings. And when you're first opening a business, I mean, I was up at 4 a.m. teaching the 5 a.m. class. Then I would come back home, get my kids up, get them dressed, get them off to school. Barely, like, I'd be lucky if they had pants on when I'm dropping them off. Then I'm going back to the gym, hustling there. I'm trying to get new clients. I'm living the dream. Then I'm running back home to pick them up from school. Then we're going back to the gym, dropping off at sports. And
wow,
the night I'm lucky if I like shoved a bean burrito in their faces before I just like literally was like, that's it. And everybody in bed, I can't handle it. And then crashed out and did it all again. I mean, I don't think we ate dinner actually together at a table until this last year when my sweet husband finally like made us this huge, beautiful farm table. But up till that point, I had to, like, I would lay awake at night crying, even in the process thinking I'm ruining my kids. I'm not there for them. We haven't eaten dinner together. I don't even know if like Bella showered in 5 days. Like them, she's going to be the stinky kid, like all these things in my head. And yet like I wasn't in a position to choose otherwise because I was doing it at that time alone.
And you had to do what you had to do.
Exactly. Like it was survival mode for us. But what happens when you get in those moments of panic, and I think my husband's done a really good job of kind of helping me to navigate this too, because he would sit there while I'd freak out. Like, they're going to be okay. What is wrong? Like, what is wrong with you? And, you know, he didn't live a typical upbringing either. And so coming to this point where I surrendered to, again, the fact that like life and our journey is ours to own, and that we are capable of providing and giving what our children need when they need it. And really what they need is just to be loved and guided and empowered to be able to make their own decisions in life for whatever that looks like, and know that we can correct course as and when needed, and that we can do that.
Be there to pick them up when they fall, because they are going to fall. We're not going to be their bubble. I mean, some parents do that, but I mean, it's hard to do that when you have 5 children and even me having 2 children.
Yeah.
And then you have a husband that's the third child, you know, like,
yeah.
I love them because they can fix anything, but man, they sometimes like act like kids. So
yeah,
it's hard to put everybody in the bubble. So you sometimes just like put each other as a partnership and the kids just like, okay, you guys go figure it out because exactly. I'm done.
Greatest gift in all of this that I was able to give my kids, at least, I mean, who knows, maybe they'll grow up and write memoirs and in it will be like, my mom was the worst ever. But I think from my perspective, the greatest gift that I have given them as we've walked through this journey has been the gift of, you know, everybody is flawed and imperfect, and the people in your life are always going to at one point or another let you down. Like there's going to be times I'm not at those games. There's going to be times where like, but it doesn't change that I love you and that I'm here for you no matter what. Like this is the space that we're in. Can you take me as I am and let me take you as you are in this moment, for whatever that looks like and whatever our journey looks like. I think there's real freedom in that concept to really be present in your moments and be loving and understanding of the people around you. And so at least for me, it's been a blessing in disguise to watch all of that unfold.
That's so cool. So we talked about normal family, like you thought growing up, this was how a normal family looks and how you should act and how you should be the wife and how you should eat by 5 p.m. and et cetera, et cetera. I think sometimes maybe that's what was perceived as normal because that's what we were told or that's what we grow up with. But then you transition into a new family unit.
Yeah.
And got remarried, which is such a beautiful wedding, by the way.
Yeah.
And now your family is almost the exact opposite. Because like with with me, we are not a eat together dinner kind of family. Mm-hmm. We're always on the move. At least I'm always on the move. And the one thing that I always deliver for my family is I'm going to make food for you because that's my responsibility as a mom. But then I have a partnership now with my husband where sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm just not like feeling it and making dinner tonight. Can you like figure out dinner and make dinner?
Yeah.
You know, because I think back in the days it was always, and at least that was also what was shown to me. And as a kid growing up and as my children is growing up watching me do what I do, is I think that we think normal is what our parents were doing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's probably one of like the biggest like transitional experiences in life for like growing into adulthood is that realization that like, oh wait, there is no normal. I mean, like you know what you're taught. And I still sift through how much of my belief system is entrenched in something that is not set in stone, does not be that way, right? Like I still sift through like are there parts of me that are holding, that are being held hostage by experiences that I had from, well, amazing, incredible family unit, like great parents that loved me and wanted the best for me too. But are there things that I adapted in my life from just childhood as must be for happiness or growth or perfect family that I can let go of that will like eliminate stressors that I'm putting on myself? And I think, you know, I'm Italian. I love sitting down and all eating together. It's like my love language. Yeah. Like coming together and eating. I feel like there are powerful moments in the mundane of that. Like I love the chaos of that. I love the sounds of it. I love the smells. I love multiple, you know, dishes out everywhere. For me, that's something I cherish when it does happen. But growing up, it was a 5 p.m. Everybody's at the table. We eat together. It was more of like, this is what we do because this is how we're supposed to do it. And again, the chaos of that, I love too. It's something I will always cherish. But it's not what makes your family a beautiful family unit. It's not right. You can find that feeling of like really embracing the chaos in my case in any moment in our home when we're all together, whether that's we're all eating or, you know, everybody just got home from sports and they all stink and they're trying to get in our shower or whatever, you know, that looks
are
like
they go to bed without showering.
Listen, showers are optional in this house. Socks are optional. Sometimes underwear is optional. I'm like, oh my gosh. Figure it out. You know, like just figure it out. I don't even, just as long as you're dressed for the legal code of standards walking out the door. Like you can't have your wang dang out. And I have to say that to my kids, my boys before. Wang dangs must be in for school. How many times have I told you that? And I feel like that's a parenting win, to be honest. If you can get your kids to 18, understanding that wang dings can't just come out whenever they want. You have successfully raised children.
Oh my gosh. But the cool thing about it is, although we know for a fact that it's not the normal family unit we grew up on, we weren't like copying our moms and our dads and the way that we grew up, it feels so normal, right?
Yeah.
Like this is our normal. And I love what you said about you create your own normal, because there's what is normal for other people may not be normal for your family. And it's super beautiful to listen and to hear that statement, because I have mom guilt. I have wife guilt.
Yes.
So where I'm like, okay, am I giving myself enough to my husband? Because I don't want my husband to go look elsewhere, you know, like that thing that worries us, because especially when you've had that done to you before, like somebody did that to you before and you've experienced it, or am I a good enough mom, or are my kids going to be ruined? Yes. Like all these things that we think about, that we worry, but the last thing we always worry about is ourselves.
Right. And yes.
Yeah. It's
interesting. It is interesting. I've learned, and I'm still learning and still practicing, but I've learned that like those blanket statements of I'm going to ruin my kids, or if am I, you know, I'm the guilt. I've learned that that guilt and that shame is something that like I need to like feel and then let go of. I need to release and I need to understand what is the source of this. Cause those labels of if I don't do it this way, I'm going to ruin my kids. Or if I don't do this with my husband, he's going to go look elsewhere. Those labels, those extremes are so, they're just, I don't want to use the word toxic, but they're not progressing. They're halting progress. Like there is no blanket statement that fits anything or anyone, right? Like, and to be honest, like when I think like exactly like that, like I'm going to ruin my kids. What does ruining kids look like? What does that mean? And that's not my own, right? Like my kids are beautiful, independent people that are, like you said earlier, they're going to fail. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to do things where, you know, where others could look at it as like, oh, that's because of bad parenting. Well, maybe it was. Like, who knows? Maybe I did something that led to this, but I'm not it doesn't change the fact that I'm not going anywhere. And right? Like, it's so layered. Like, it's just so layered. And at the end of the day, like, you know, most moms hopefully want the love and best for their children. We try the best that we can, but we're never going to be perfect ever.
Yeah. We only get one shot at this. And it's not like we, you know, we were in another life and we got a practice and now we got reborn and become mom. And like, here we go. We're ready. We can do this. We can do this perfectly.
Yes.
You know? You don't get a training. You're on the job training.
Exactly. Well, and the other part of that, the other thought that's really comforting to me, and I'm sure that there's an argument against this somewhere, but I'm going to cling to it because it helps. But the other thought for me is like, I need to remember that like I truly believe that these kids are gifts in my life and that they are a part of me. And whether or not you believe in like God or the genetic aspect or whatever it is that you believe that led these children to you to be yours, I believe that as their mother, they have needs that only specifically can be met by my strengths.
Yes.
And vice versa. Like no book, no blog, no this, that, or the other. Sure, I can gain tips from here and there. There is nothing that is going to be able to navigate me and being able to give these children what they need and their moments of need, like the fact that I am bound to them as their mother. Like I believe when we become a mothers, whether that's, you know, through adoption or having children or, you know, whatever that looks like, I believe that love and that connection there also enables us with this unique gift to be able to instinctively know how to guide and raise them and give them those things that they need. But so often we question that, right? So often we think we're not enough on our own. And like I said, there's always tools out there, but it's also like we are powerful and just in loving and listening and being receptive to what that inner voice kind of tells us that they need, right? And if it's born out of love and not out of fear, raising my children from a place of love and not fear, oh my gosh, if I don't lay the law down with this, then they're going to X, Y, and Z, right? That's a fear-based for me in some cases, and I've done that often, instead of this love-based that we're all going to be okay, they're going to be okay, we're going to work through this. How can I love them through this and teach them at the same time?
It's so cool to also see, because my husband didn't really, I mean, there was love growing up in his family, but it was not loud enough. It was more like rough, like military style, you know?
Yes.
And with my family, it was, there was a lot of love, but there was not a lot of attention, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so the only love that we really had loud enough were the love from our siblings, because our mom was so busy trying to chase my dad because he was such a bad husband and, you know, to keep him on track. And, you know, I probably grew up in the same religious background as you. I grew up as Catholic, and
Lots of guilt and shame in that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And once they're married, you know, my mom, no matter how hard it got, she was there for my dad. But, you know, when she was there for my dad, she wasn't there for us. Mm. And so luckily we were six of us siblings, and growing up, having just the love for each other, because we only had each other. Imagine if you weren't there for your kids and your sons and your older sons were the ones that are parenting your younger ones. Yeah. That's kind of how it was with us growing up. But we have so much love, enough for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, that we created between each other. And because of that, we as a family unit are still together.
Hi. Say hi, Mav.
Hey, Mav.
Little wild Mav.
Dad, happy Father's Day ahead of time.
Yes. Mav's working on his homeless look lately. That hair just go and flow. It looks good though. He says, oh, look at that.
Awesome. So in the things that you talk about, like, we are their mother because we are the only ones that have what they need. I truly believe that statement, and I agree 100% wholeheartedly, because I believe even in life, like when I look at life and I step out of my body and I look at life, like without judgment, without looking at things and material stuff and, you know, the nice stuff that we get in this worldly planet, is that we just are like a puzzle for each other. Like, we're never complete without each other. And so when you said that, I resonated that, because I always say this, like, this whole life is a puzzle and we are the pieces of those puzzle. And without each other, we are not going to survive, really, I think.
Yeah. There's something powerful about community, and family is a community. And sometimes it's family you are blood related to, and sometimes it's a community and family that finds you along your path of life. But there's so much power in that. There really is so much power in community and people and time. Yeah.
So how was your childhood growing up? Were you happy? Was it like a really happy family? Were there a lot of struggles?
Yeah. You know, I always believed I grew up in a really happy home. My parents moved here. My dad had been married once before and had two children who my brother and sister, half brother and sister, but I truly look at them as my brother and sister. So they were older and never lived with us. My parents moved here from California and they converted to Mormonism. And then, I grew up Mormon, and my dad wasn't going to have any more kids. I think he had a really tumultuous, like, divorce that he held a lot of guilt onto from that, which as an adult, I can look at that now and see how that impacted our life growing up. But there, you know, I was born, I was 1 pound, 14 ounces when I was born, and my narrative. So I was the oldest in our home, in their, you know, this little family unit. And my narrative growing up was that I was a miracle, and I was special and saved because of the priesthood, and that, you know, my role in life was to, like, be a daughter of God and be a missionary and protect my sisters. And, you know, we faithfully went to church every week, and my dad held multiple callings that were really high up in the church. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom. We never had a lot of money. I do know that. I knew that right from the get, but my dad never didn't work and hustle for our family. I can remember times where he would lose a job or get laid off, and he would go, like, he'd show up in these big, like, bunny outfits because he was holding signs on the side of the road for some car dealership or something. But he was always hustling. He always had that, like, entrepreneurial spirit too. Like, he made life magical. Regardless of the fact that we didn't have money, my dad always made life magical for us.
Wow.
Our family was his art. Even if it was articulated in a way like, Sarah, you are my firstborn in this covenant, and there was lots of religion wrapped up in that, what he was saying was, this is my chance to be the father that I've always wanted to be again, and I want to protect that. And so I was born at 1 pound and 14 ounces, and then my sister was born 11 months later, and then I have another sister that's 3 years younger than me, Shelley, and then We had Megan, my last sister, she has Down syndrome. And then when my parents found out she had Down syndrome, shortly after, they were like, well, we wanted all of our girls close. And now because, you know, Megan has Downs, we need to find Megan's sister that she can grow up with. So they shortly after adopted my sister, Angela. Her and Megan are very close in age. Angela was a newborn. And back in that day, like back in the day, like now I'm pretty sure this is illegal, but they just, somebody called saying, hey, there's a baby that was just born up in Seattle and it's bouncing from family to family because nobody wants this little girl. She has Down syndrome. And so my mom's like, that's our girl, let's go. And they drove to Seattle, grabbed Angie, yeah, in the car and brought her home. So my two baby sisters have Down syndrome. I'm still very, very close to them. And have them on a regular basis. But yeah, I mean, we were close-knit family, lots of chaos, lots of imagination. My dad would like make the craziest toys out of the most random crap I've ever seen in my entire life. But we would be for hours and hours. He would tell us stories. It really was like a charmed childhood in a lot of ways. And
that's so cool.
So that was good. And then, you know, the older you get, the more you start to like really evaluate, you know, because on one side, this childhood was beautiful and great. On the other side, it really instilled in me some things that caused me a lot of pain and hurt in my life. I was never attracted to my husband that I was married to before. It was a very, like, lots of conflict there with, like, I don't want to be married forever to this. Is this what it's supposed to be like? Is this what it's supposed to feel like? Like, it doesn't feel, and then it's not, it's taboo. You don't talk about that at all.
Yeah.
With that for a really long time. And then walking through a divorce on top of being super like religious, it was rough. I lost my entire support system at the time, aside from my dad, who again is one of the most incredible people I've ever met. But I told him first and I knew for sure, like, I don't want to disappoint him. I don't want him to be worried that we're not going to be together forever. And my dad, all he said was, I love you and I'm here for you no matter what. And I know he was probably scared and disappointed and worried about what this was going to look like for me, but he didn't articulate that. All he articulated was love.
That's so cool.
You know, no family's perfect. But it always just, for us, love was always there regardless of our imperfections. And for that, I feel really lucky.
What was your dream as a child, and has that dream changed at all?
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. Have you seen that quote? Like, so as I'm building content, one of the things I keep coming back to is like, what's something that like people can connect to really help them stay motivated and true to their motivations with whatever that is? And so have you ever heard that, like, who were you before the world told you what you needed to be? Have you ever heard that?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking like, that's hard for me to answer. And it boils down, I now, as I've thought about it, I'm like, oh, I remember that. I was like young enough to where I'm outside in my underoos, running in our sprinklers in the summer, not caring the world. I knew I was someone that I didn't care the world, didn't care what the world thought of me yet, because I had my unibrow, which was like all the way down my nose, and it didn't matter. Me, like, it was flapping in the wind while I was running. That's like, I didn't know that was like socially taboo. I did not care. So it was that like freedom and love of nature. And I'm climbing in our trees all the time. I'm running in the sprinklers. I'm excited about the ice cream truck, the smell of the like hot concrete. We were up on Mount Tabor. There are all the old streets with the tar that still like runs to keep the cracks in. So I'd always have tar, but I felt so free and beautiful. So I think about that often, because I'm like, what would that girl have wanted for her life? Because as you get older and as all the pressures like of life kind of build up, you start to build this life that sometimes you're missing that feeling of just freedom and being. So that little girl I still don't know what she would say she wanted to be, except for just happy and free and at peace and living in her moment. And I think I will be happy with whatever I choose to do if I can regroup and focus on being present in my moment, and whatever that looks like, with the people that are there, with the task at hand, like no concern for the would have, should have, dang it's of the past, and no anxiety for the what ifs of the future. Just claiming that present moment, I think, is the best answer that I can come up with what would I have wanted to be. I think present and free.
So you said just happy. Are you happy?
No. I think I have moments of really happy, and then I still struggle every day with those moments of focusing too much on like the past, mm-hmm. worrying too much about the future, and that robs me of that initial happy, right? So I think I have, every day I have moments of happiness, every day yeah. I have moments of like of success, every day I have moments of failure. Am I always just happy? No, I'm not. And I don't know that that's a bad way to be. I think yeah. what my focus lately has been is be present and mm-hmm. and understand and be more in control of how to claim my peace and recenter and be happy. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I love how you answer that, because it's true. And you're when I meet someone that's so super genuine, like I'm meeting you right now, I always, in the end, I always say it was great to meet your soul, because there's so many fake dang people in this planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, they put this facade of perfect.
Yeah.
And it's really, you mentioned the word toxic. It's very toxic to society, because, like, you know, we have children growing up watching other people, you know, showing up like they look this just perfect, beautiful, flawless skin, whatever perfect means to people. But I love how you answered my question when you said, you know, I'm not happy all the time, which is super amazing to hear. So kudos to you for saying that, because we are human. And, you know, the answer is never a black and white answer. It's right. always like, it depends.
Yeah. What minute in the day are you asking? It really does depend. And also I think it's really important to own that truth, not just as women, but as people in general, that like happiness is something that is not based on, it is not based on good or evil. It is not based on any of those things. It is, happiness is a human experience. Mm-hmm. That everyone, be it good or evil, be it wherever you are on the scale, is entitled to feel. Yeah. And it's not, happiness is not a direct result of our actions in life, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't, because you're sad one day, because you're having a hard day, because you're stressed, because you're these things, it doesn't mean that you are not doing what's right or a good person or failing in all avenues of life. It's just like, if you have moments of happiness, it's not necessarily directly equated to your worth or righteousness or whatever. And I think people, and especially I think the marketing, you know, our society, as far as what they try to sell us, tries to sell us on happiness means yeah. you made it in life. You're successful. You're great. Everything's perfect for you. And here, I know how you can buy happiness. Like, I have the key for you to do that. Just buy this and look, you'll be so happy.
Or the pill.
The pill, right. Right. So it's interesting. It's interesting. It's definitely one of those kind of like retrospective soul searching type of questions. Are you happy? And what does that mean?
It's fleeting too. Like, a lot of emotions that we feel are so fleeting. And I think we build a nest in them, especially yeah. when they're bad.
Yes.
And instead of building a nest when they're good, like, being in a happy state
yeah.
is a good feeling. And, you know, why not build a nest there? Why is it always so much more attractive to build a nest and dwell on something so super bad?
Right.
When it's already past, it's the past, right? Like, you talk about being present in the moment. Yeah. And then being having anxiety of the future,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we focus so much on bad. Like if we can just focus our energy on so much more good, knowing now, I'm not saying like, when I say that, I think some people miscommunicate it as, or misunderstand it as, you know, perfect moment. When I say like, just enjoy the moment and be happy and focus on the good, that doesn't mean that I don't have the bad in my life.
Right.
I think a lot of negative people, you know, like when I post something so good, some people may have a thought of like, wow, that's so inconsiderate. It's Happy Father's Day, but you know, what about those that don't have their dads anymore? And I feel like, hey, you know, I didn't post that to hurt someone's feelings or being inconsiderate. I'm just posting that because I mean, I'm celebrating my happy.
Yes.
And because I do have good, I do have bad things and shitty right. things that happens in my life.
Right. So. Well, and I think you hit it right on the nail when you said celebrate. Like it is okay for us to be able to own our truth, whether that's I don't have a father, but still celebrate the beautiful aspects of what that means to people who do have that, or the good fathers mm-hmm. out there, or X, Y, and Z. We can own our truth and still celebrate other people's successes and happiness. And yeah, that's, and there is, like you were saying, there is joy there too. There is happiness there too, by practicing that, you know, by practicing celebrating other people's successes and other people's joys. And there is more joy to be added upon and multiplied in our life by pulling on that. And it doesn't take away from your pain or your experiences there. Like it doesn't limit or negate those because someone else has something joyful to express and to be grateful for.
So when I'm talking to you, I'm capturing a lot of growth, like personal growth. I feel like you've been on this personal journey, and a lot of the things that you're saying, like being present in the moment, is very much so resonating with me, because as soon as I found out about, I can grow from within and it is up to me.
Mm-hmm.
The surroundings around me change because I can change.
Mm-hmm.
I can change the inside of me and my inner peace. I can improve that my surroundings starts changing. So as soon as I figured that out, I started even doubling down on personal growth and personal development. But in your case, are you or have gone through something similar and have studied a lot of these things? Because I feel like you have some influence when it comes to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Personal growth, man. So I'm pretty type A. I like a checklist. You give me a checklist, I'm going to do it. And then I want the result almost immediately. And so personal growth, as I've literally hit walls of like absolute, like, misery, I think, at certain times, or I've hit these walls of like my stress limits 100 million, my anxieties limits 100, like, and I'm looking for all these external fixes for this and checklists for this. In order to grow through and around that, you have to, we all have to get to this point that we look inside with like, okay, like you were just saying, how can I change my perspectives, my limiting beliefs, all these things, and then how will that impact the way I see and perceive life and myself and my efforts and my family? And it's a very long process of refinement. It's a practice like anything else. It's a practice like movement. And so I try to make time for that. I'm not the best at it, but I try to make time to be still and to be okay in the unknown of decluttering what's inside of me, if that makes sense.
And are you learning from a specific person when it comes to personal development, or do you go to like attend a coaching session?
I have jumped into multiple coaching sessions like externally and hired coaches for business or this, that, or the other, but most of what I'm doing as far as like really jumping into like personal development has been like books and or listening to books on tape. I do that often. I do have like meditative apps, mm-hmm. And certain meditations for certain things. And I'll take some time just to sit in the sauna and listen to those. I have a counselor. I go to counseling and I drag my sweet husband along with me, which is so fun. I actually do love it. But like all of those things that I know will help kind of like strengthen my inner like child, so to speak, those inner whatever it is inside of me. So I had a friend years ago tell me about this meditation thing that he did. And he's this killer, crazy, amazing, like world record holding Olympic lifter. And this young kid. And he came to do a seminar at the gym. And he was like, my life has just been changed, because he went for like this multiple day retreat of silence. And I'm like, oh, that would kill me dead. Silence. Are you out of your brains? Like, I have the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. I went to a heated yoga class for 90 minutes and felt like I was going to die because they wouldn't let you talk at all. Like, I couldn't be silent for like 5 minutes, let alone days. But I've thought about that a lot. And as I've kind of developed, this was years ago, as I've developed, I'm like, there's so much wisdom in what he was saying, and that like, no, there is, yeah, it's hard. It was hard. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But you're forced to be
with yourself.
Yourself and process and learn. And yeah. That, you know, he did it in this really consolidated time frame. And so I'm trying to pull aspects of that, of silence and being okay, being
I meditate every morning, and I, you know, it doesn't have to be long. I've done a long, long one. But meditation doesn't have to be long, especially when you practice it a lot. You don't need a lot, because it compounds over time. But it literally, you know how, like yesterday I interviewed a woman over in California, and we talked about the voices in our head. And it's funny because she names these two major voices, Penelope and the other one that she really wants to be. And this other one is just safe, you know, she wants to play it safe. But it's true, we have these voices. And I told her, if I heard you talk to me like that when I was 25, I'd run away from you. You're a crazy woman.
Right. I'll tell athletes that same thing. And it sounds crazy when I'm saying it, because I'm like, everybody has this voice in their head, and I'll tell them, I want you to name that voice. And then it's there because of our fear instinct. It tries to keep us safe. It's a part of you too. Don't fight that voice. It's a part of you. Instead, name it, welcome it, talk to it in your brains. Like, I can see why you would be scared for me to do X, Y, and Z, or why you think I'm going to fail to do blah, 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 but I'm going to try it this way. Will you come with me? Like, reteach that voice.
Yeah.
There's power in that. But as I'm saying it, like, you can see people kind of check out sometimes with like, oh, she just told me to talk to myself in my brains and name the, it's crazy. Yeah.
Their body language and the way that their facial expression is, right?
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, okay, we're not ready for this one. Great. Grab a barbell. Let's go. Like,
yeah. Well, because it starts right here. You know that, you know, the hardest part of going to the gym is going.
Yep.
Ass in the gym. Yep. That's the hardest part. Mm-hmm. Once you're there, you're like, well, I'm glad I did this today. I feel so good, energized, ready to take on the world, you know?
Yeah.
But so the meditation for me has literally, you know, allowed me to kind of put the voices in their places, you know, like, okay, these are the voices that I've been hearing loud and clear, and they're negative voices, and I'm not gonna, it makes me quiet down myself and really listen to the good voices versus the negative ones, you know? And so having quiet moments for yourself, and even sometimes in the car, like my car is like my best friend, because it's when I can tune out all like really a lot of noises. And you know, when the kids are dropped in school and I'm the only one in the car, that's it. It's all me, and I can talk to myself. And, you know, if you ever see me in my car and talking to myself,
I love it. I'll be talking to the voices. Girl. Yeah, that's my girl right there, because I do the same thing. Yeah.
So, you know, and it's like, I used to laugh at people. Like, when I came from the Philippines to America, I'd ride the public transit, you know, I'd ride the bus.
And those people that would be talking to themselves. Yeah.
Yes. I used to like laugh at them, and I'm like, who's laughing now?
Exactly. They were just a very centered human being. They were just very centered. And like, yes, I know.
Yes. And when somebody says like, when I was younger and I look at them like, gosh, they're like retards or abnormal or, you know, and when I look at myself at the young, like if I'm observing myself, thinking back as a young person, I'm like, I was the retard.
Yes.
You know, like now that I've grown so much in my personal growth, like who was the abnormal one? Who, yeah. Like, what is an abnormal person really? Yeah. Because we don't know what we don't know. And now that I know, I'm like, gosh, I was the screwed up one.
One of my other favorite quotes, I'm like a walking Pinterest board with quotes, but one of my other favorite quotes is like, be kind because there's always a chance that you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like, even if you really think that this is the way to do it, like growth and life and learning always kind of has these moments where you're like, oh, they were totally like, I get now how they reacted or were that way, or, you know, they were, I get it. Like,
yeah, that's why, like, I've grown a lot. And I think that if we work on ourselves, we can truly like change who we are and, you know, understand people, every person. Like, I don't not understand anybody now. I just take a moment, and especially when someone is nasty, negative, or you know, attacking me, or I hear someone talking smack about me, I just, like, for me, I'm just like, okay, I wonder how, that's why I talk about childhood when I'm on my podcast, because there's a lot of people that go through childhood, you know, not as charmed as we have. Like, even though my childhood was so rough, I still to this day feel so fortunate because it created who I am.
Right.
You know? And so when I hear someone, you know, being nasty, or I hear someone crying to me because they were being attacked, I just like, okay, I understand that maybe it was quite fearful for you. But have you ever took some moment to understand where that person was coming from? And maybe the little girl in them that was maybe went through trauma came out that day. And sometimes that, you know, they are, you know, 99% of the time they're normal, good people.
Right.
And they don't go nasty like that. But there's that really small 1%. Now, maybe that little girl that maybe was abused or molested or whatever, in that they come out and they come out and play nastily. Like, we're not perfect. We have nasty sides of us, but it's about how you can control it, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's about, like you were saying, it's seeking first to understand. I feel like creating clear boundaries as well, because if you're also in a really vulnerable spot where you're not in a place to be able to really seek to understand, creating a clear boundary without reacting from anger can be a very powerful tool as well. Like, it's okay if you don't have the mental space at that point in time to be able to deal with somebody else's hurt child coming out, but eventually you will be in a space to be able to do that. And as long as that's how you work through building relationships with people, or navigating, especially in like a service industry or a public, like you are navigating that from a place of seek first to understand and love and create clear boundaries, and know that that reaction has more to do with that person, especially if it's angry and nasty and ugly. It has more to do with them and their journey.
It's so true.
A reflection of you. Like, it's not a reflection of you.
They're projecting it. And
yeah.
So Sarah, are your parents still around?
Yeah, my mom is. My dad passed away this last year. It's been a really, really
hard
year. Yeah, I have never dealt with grief ever. So that kicked me right in my ass, up one side, down the other, you know. He got sick about, he's probably been sick since I was like 19. I remember him starting to shake, and he was diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
Parkinson's, if you've ever loved or known somebody that has Parkinson's, it's nasty to watch it slowly take their lives away from them. And so my dad, who literally like was the most like vibrant, amazing, incredible, happy person you've ever known. Like, he knew everyone's name everywhere we went. He knew everyone's story. Like, the grocery store clerks all knew him. We'd go to the little local Albertsons.
Sounds like me now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he brought people. His only goal in life was to make people around him laugh and smile. He'd tell the dumbest jokes. He best stories. Like, he really was just full of love and life. Was my person in life. Like, he was my person. I never heard him say a negative thing about me ever.
Wow.
Rare. I don't know that I've ever even met anyone else like that in my life that had my back like that. Like, he was my person. And so I was able to be with him when he passed and hold him. And it was such a crazy year last year, having Maverick and freaking out because I was pregnant. And then my dad really getting so sick, I'm having to find homes for him. And don't even get me started on how screwed up our healthcare is for supporting adults at end stage, right? Like, I'm having to figure out how, because my mom's a wreck and I have my two sisters, and then Mav's born. And that's when it all became clear, like, this is why Maverick's here now, because my dad, while he was losing his mind, like, he knew Mav and Mav knew him. Like, they didn't speak, but Maverick was the only one that could make my dad smile towards the end. Like, my dad loved babies. He always used to say, I'd have 100 more if I could. So I was able to, hold my dad as he passed away, and he finally passed away. All of us kids were in there with him and my mom, and it'd been days. And with brains are weird. You don't really know at end stage. Like, they'll tell you, well, he could get better tomorrow. He could get worse. And we were all standing and laying with them and telling stories. And I said something and everyone laughed. And it was in that moment that my dad passed. It was like he was waiting to know that we were all going to be okay. And then I remember leaving, holding him, kissing him, telling him I loved him, that I keep everyone safe, and leaving. And just the world looked and felt different. And I was almost angry at the people, like, driving through Starbucks and getting their gas. Like, you guys, like, I felt like I needed to pull over and roll down the window and be like, you don't understand. Like, the world is different. My dad's gone. Like, you shouldn't be just like, the world shouldn't just keep going. Like, what do people do? How do they move on from this? And so, you know, this has probably been one of the hardest, seasons of my life, having my dad gone, and especially having my dad gone when I'm uncertain about faith and where I fit with all that. I used to believe one certain way and know everything, and now I'm okay with the mystery of it all until someone like my dad is gone, and then I'm like, where is he? What's going on? What's happening? Like,
yeah.
Mav has saved me again, my son, my family, like, but especially Maverick. When you're stuck in the grief process of losing someone like that, I think there's something about being able to have my baby wrap his little chubby arms around my neck that pierces through the weight of grief and sadness and anguish. Like,
I want to stop you right there really quick, because when you talked about Mav and how you had him, you said that he was quite an accident or unexpected or something.
Yes.
And I believe in this life that there is no such thing.
Yeah.
And that everything has its purpose. And the moment that when your dad was passing, I think you found that purpose.
Without a doubt. I think it just is one of those lessons that the universe gives you to help. Like, there's these truths. There's just these truths that pierce through everything else. And one of those truths that I've been taught over and over again is, all things happen as far as, you know, those moments of panic that I have, like that moment when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, oh, my whole life is ruined. This is fantastic. What the heck? Like, I can't believe this is happening at 40. Like, there goes my body. Like, oh, I'm going to be nursing again. That's exciting.
Yeah.
But like these moments of sheer panic, I'm learning more to embrace what I cannot control, because there is always something beautiful. Always something beautiful, and in this case, not just beautiful, but my savior, like my saving grace for this amount of time, my dad's saving grace. Like, and it's not like I didn't know logically, like, babies are great, they're gonna be great, you're gonna love them, you're gonna love your baby. Like, it's not like I didn't know that, but I really didn't know the layers and the extent of how much I would need that in my life and my dad. And like, I would do it a million times over, you know, if I could.
If there's anything or anyone that is the master of balancing, it's Mama Universe.
Yes.
She's the master of balancing. And that's the only thing that is so balanced in this whole world, because somehow, some way, when we struggle, there's always something good that comes out of it, you know, to balance it out.
Always.
So it's Father's Day next week. What would you tell your dad if he was around?
Oh, yeah, this is going to, oh God.
Drink your beer, girl. Drink up, sister.
I would tell my dad, thank you for being the best person and loving me the way that he did. And I would also tell him, we're all okay. And your legacy lives on. Like, I still work every day to remember to try to make someone around me smile. And that's because I want to honor the legacy that my dad worked so hard to leave. So those would be the two things. He was always most worried about us all being okay. Take care of the girls, Sarah, take care of the family. And he was always, he would always tell me over and over again how much he loved me and he wanted us to know. And he always was worried that we didn't know enough how much he loved us. And so I would tell him, I would reiterate again the words that I told him over and over when he was in that dang bed. You were the best dad I could ever have. Thank you so much. And we're all okay.
What day did he die last year?
He died in July, the end of July last year.
Do you know the day?
I don't know the specific day. It's all kind of a blur. I know mm-hmm. we were on our family vacation and had a rush home. And because, you know, he'd been going fine and then it's not fine, fine. And then it's not fine. So we had to get back home fast. I have it, I'm sure logged. I have it logged somewhere, but it's still really painful. It's still really painful for me to, like, it's really hard for me to look at pictures of him. Even it's still really fresh and painful. And so there's parts of that box I just have to, like, open slowly at different times. Like, I have to be in a place.
Do it in your own terms, girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's cool about this episode is, you know, it's it has a lot of dad in it.
Mm.
And it's going to be released next week on Father's Day because I release every Sunday, you know. So it's going to be so fitting for Father's Day. What is your message to your mom?
My message to my mom would be, thank you for the sacrifices that you made that are both seen and unseen to be the constant woman in this family. Like, she loved and took care of my dad. She loves and takes care of my sisters. Mm-hmm. And I know the toll and sacrifice that there were parts of her she lost, and rediscovering all of that. And my voice to her, my what I would say to her is just, I know that's a huge cost, and I want you to know, woman to woman, thank you. And now my goal for my mom is, let's help you refine and recenter and discover who you are. And I'm grateful to be a part of that process too.
What's your message, just one message, to all your children? Because, you know, they can listen to the podcast. They're very technologically inclined.
They are, when they want to be. My message to them would be, you are the greatest parts that I have ever been a part of creating in this world. You are the greatest, you are my greatest adventure in life, and grateful to have them.
Okay. Now, your husband is a dad. It's mm-hmm. Father's Day when we release this. What's your message to your husband?
to my sexy husband.
To my sexy husband.
There's so many messages I would want to send to him. I'll keep it very G-rated. I will say there's multiple versions.
But you do make people laugh. Because
that gets us into trouble. That gets us pregnant at 40. Yeah. My answer or my message to him would be, thank you for being my ride or die. Thank you for being my one, my partner, my choice.
That's awesome.
My ride or die.
That's so cool. And you picked him.
Yeah, I picked him.
I picked him. A good one too.
I did. Yep. I tell him all. Nothing makes you grateful for like the really beautiful relationships you have in your life, like going through dysfunctional ones. I will say that I am head over heels for this imperfect, flawed, super hot husband that I have, and for him accepting and loving me where I'm at, and vice versa.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So before I ask you my last question, I just want to give you kudos for living life the way you are living it and accepting and acknowledging the fact that we're not perfect. I love that about you. I love your jokes. I love your realness. You're like super real, raw. I love that about you. Love at first sight, by the way, when I saw you at the gym. Challenge, I'm like, oh, that girl is my girl right there.
That was the craziest, funniest day too. I remember it. I remember with Mav, and I'm talking to and then do you remember all of the last minute people that came and signed up for that day? I have everything like organized and ready. And so we have like 10 athletes to sign up day of, and they're all like English second language, amazing athletes. But I deliver this speech that I'm like a hoorah speech, and all 10 of them are like, we had no idea what you say. I've done it. I've impacted the world. And they're like, nobody understands you.
I did. So I got you, girl. Well, and so just kudos to you for just doing your best, and your best is the best. So don't ever think it's short. It's perfect for your children. And I love that about you. Before I go to my last question, where can we find Sarah? What platform on social media do you usually hang out? Let the world know where Sarah can be found.
I have a business Facebook page, 346 Grit CrossFit. We're in Gresham, Oregon. We're on Instagram as well. We don't check that as much. I am on both Facebook and Instagram. I'm on both of those quite a bit. Sarah Coleman on there. Come find me. I will be friends with you. As long as you're not a pervert, we can be friends. My facility. Is that what we wanted to answer? So yeah.
Do you have a website?
Message me. We do have a website. 346crossfit.com is our website. I'm just starting to develop all of like the content aspect. So this has been really fascinating for me to be a part of. We have a platform set up now for getting ready to like blog and podcast and pull other people along in the health and wellness space and really help people along their way of whatever their health journey looks like for them at that point in their life, just to empower them to take steps towards, you know, reclaiming parts of their life that they might be stuck in when it comes to health and wellness. So we are getting ready to run another 6 weeks here soon. And this one has a digital platform as well. So you can do it from anywhere in the
nation. That's amazing.
So it should be fun. Well,
congratulations on all your success. My one last question is, what is Sarah Coleman's definition of mother hustler? And when you heard that lingo, what came to your mind?
Ooh, mother hustler. My definition of that, first of all, it's a when I heard that lingo, when I heard you first tell me that, I was like, I'm in that club. Like, it was empowering. It was so empowering here. I loved everything about it. I was like, hell yeah. I'm a mother hustler. Out of my way. I don't know if we've met yet, but I am a mother fucking hustler is what I heard. When I heard that, was awesome. I think my definition of a mother hustler would be, that's a hard one for me, mother hustler. I mean, you kind of sum it up with like loving and mothering the world, right? Like, I would say loving and mothering the world through empowerment and just being the overall best human being you can be. I love it. I think that it's You've summed it up. There's nothing else I can add to that. You've really done a good job.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for being here today. I've enjoyed our conversation. Like, I literally can talk to you forever.
I know. I love it. I love it. This is so fun. I'm like, is this, you have the greatest job in the world.
Yeah, right?
I can't wait. So thank you so much for genuinely the honor of being a part of this. I really do appreciate it.
Awesome. You're welcome.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll see you soon.
All right, sisters, thank you so much for listening and always supporting the Being Mother Hustler podcast every single episode, every single week. I know most of you take screenshots of these episodes and share it all over your social media outlet. And for some of you that's left us a 5-star review, from the bottom of my heart, I'm so super grateful for you. Make sure you follow us on Spotify and subscribe to the show on iTunes. And it would mean the world to the entire Mother Hustler Nation community if you wrote us a 5-star review. Because I'm telling you, this is not about me. This is not about you. It's about all of us in the community inspiring each other, learning from each other, and not allowing each other to make any excuses to chase our dreams. I swear I read those reviews and it fuels me to my core, makes me cry for great reasons. So I so look forward to reading those reviews. As always, sisters, don't forget to give, serve, live, and love. Have a mother hustling day.